The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Welcome, welcome. I want to say good evening because it's evening for me, but whenever you're listening to this, whether it's the morning, the afternoon, and wherever you are right now, welcome. So this is a talk tonight. It will be the second in a series that I am doing on refuge. It's kind of exploring this topic, and I have to say for me it's turned out to be really tender, much more than I expected it to. Maybe in some ways we think like, oh, refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that's old or tired, or I've heard that a bazillion times. And for those of you who have done a lot of retreat practice know that it's the custom to do the refuges at the beginning of each retreat, and there's always a little talk. So I want to keep it a little bit fresh and new and kind of explore this maybe in a little bit different way than perhaps we've heard it before. So last week was refuge in the Buddha. Tonight will be refuge in the Dharma. And next week will be refuge in the Sangha. And each week I'll unpack a little bit more about what does refuge mean, as well as talk about either the Buddha, the Dharma, or the Sangha. So last week I talked about refuge as being an orientation, kind of like a turning towards a direction that we're going. And tonight I'd like to talk more about refuge being a transformation. And one way to explore this is that the commentaries, that is, these texts that were written maybe around 800 years after the time of the Buddha, maybe up to 1,000 years. And for some Buddhists, they hold the commentaries as authoritative, and some other Buddhists, not so much. But however we hold them, that they always have some interesting ideas for us to explore and investigate. And they describe refuge as something that slays. Kind of like this idea of slaying, kind of like whew, with the sword in some way, slays fear, slays affliction, and refuge slays dukkha. So maybe to unpack that a little bit, if refuge is something that slays fear, affliction, and dukkha, then we can imagine or consider that going for refuge, this is a process of putting an end to dukkha. And how does that work? Maybe going for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is a way that puts our experience in perspective. That sometimes just simply saying, oh yes, this is dukkha, is a way that helps us to not get swept away, not get lost in, not get overwhelmed by the experience, even though the experience may be terribly difficult, may be suffering, or even if it just may be mild stress, whatever it might be. Sometimes to just recognize, okay, this is dukkha. It's a way that can help put it in perspective. And in the same way, to recognize that we're not the only ones that have this experience, that part of the Buddha's teachings is that there is dukkha, there is suffering in this world, in the human experience. And we're not the only ones. So it helps put our experience in perspective, and that way it can help maybe slay some of the fear or affliction. Also, this going for refuge or taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha helps the fear of the future or bitterness of the past help them to be diminished and eventually just simply put to rest. In the sense that with this practice, we recognize that the role that conditions have, that is, we can put in place conditions that are, it's more likely that there'll be some ease and happiness in our future. We begin to understand, to behave ethically, to gain clarity, to understand ourselves better, is a way in which we can create a future that has more well-being and more ease, not only for us, but for those around us, those we care about, if we're behaving ethically or if we're gaining some more clarity, some wisdom. So to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, some way that we could have less fear about the future, and also we can start to understand the past. Oh yes, these were the conditions that were in place, and like, of course things unfolded that way. I didn't understand things, or I was felt overwhelmed by my experience, and I did the best that I could at the time, or maybe that person did the best that they could at that time, but they didn't understand or didn't have the capacity to hold things, so they acted out. So in this way, there can be less bitterness about the future, about the past, which can bring more ease, less affliction. And also if we're going for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, there can be a sense of direction, or maybe even a sense of purpose for our life. And for some people, their Buddhist practice or the Buddhist teachings become like an organizing principle which helps them to make sense of their life and also help them to prioritize how they're going to spend their energy, their effort, their resources. Going for refuge can be a way and say, okay, this is important. This is what I'm going to do with my life, I'm going to support this. And in so many ways, having a direction for our lives, maybe even a purpose for our life, to find greater and greater ease and freedom for ourselves and for others, can be a tremendous support. And maybe there can be some slaying around the affliction of this wondering, what should I be doing? Maybe the Dharma, taking refuge, doesn't give us the particulars in which ways we should be, the particulars of what we should be doing with our life or with this hour or with this day, this era, this season. But maybe it clarifies what we shouldn't be doing. Maybe it helps us to get in contact with what more our inner life, our inner experience, which makes it more clear what we should be doing or can be doing. So in some way, we could say that this way that the Dharma slays fear, slays affliction, and slays dukkha. But when we say the Dharma, what do we mean? So tonight I want to talk about two ways we can talk about the Dharma. One is as the natural unfolding of experience. And I'll unpack this a little bit. So that's kind of like just the natural laws, or sometimes when we talk about Dharma in this way, it's closely associated with the words truth or law or natural, something like that. And of course, we can also talk about the Dharma as the teaching of the Buddha. And in this way, we can think of the Dharma as support. And the word Dharma is derived from the root dir, which means to hold, to bear, to support. The verb that comes from that root dir is dharati, and that's often translated as to carry or to hold. And for me, I like this idea of the Dharma being able to hold everything. It's not a perfect analogy, but I like this idea that the Dharma can hold everything and can support whatever is arising or whatever our experience might be. So to begin with this idea of Dharma as the way things are, the truth, the nature, the law of things, there's this quote in the suttas that says, whether there is an arising of a Tathagata or no arising of a Tathagata, so a Tathagata is the Buddha, and this is the way that the Buddha often refers to himself. So when he's speaking, he refers to himself as the Tathagata. Whether there is an arising of a Tathagata or no arising of a Tathagata, that element still persists. The stableness of the Dharma, the fixed course of the Dharma. A Tathagata awakens to this and breaks through to this. So in this way, they're saying that the Dharma is something that the Buddha awakens to. So these laws or truths or nature or reality or something like that. And then this sutta passage continues by saying, so a Tathagata awakens to this and breaks through to this, and having done so, the Tathagata explains it, teaches it, proclaims it, establishes it, discloses it, analyzes it, and elucidates it. So on this passage, so clearly the Dharma is more than just the Buddha's teachings. And maybe I'll talk from another passage that elucidates this or fleshes this out a little bit. Okay, if it's, what are these, some of these truths or laws or nature? And this is a story where there's a king. It's an elderly king. And he looks out and he sees that there's this monk, but he recognizes the person and knows that this person comes from a very wealthy and very high-standing family. And he's young, and this monk is very young. And the king is wondering, why would somebody who comes from this has that, all the comforts of life, and you know, with young, and has enough wealth to have whatever is available, and has, comes from a well-respected family. Why would a person like that ordain and become a monk underneath the Buddha? So this king goes to the monk and asks him, and the monk Retapala was pretty skilled, I would say, in the way that he responded to the king. And he spoke to the king using examples that the king could relate to. That is, the monk wasn't talking about renunciation, you know, giving away everything. And the monk wasn't talking about these esoteric meditative attainments or anything like that. Instead, he used examples and language that a king could respond to, could relate to. So Retapala says, great king, the blessed one who knows and sees, the fully awakened Buddha, has taught these four summaries of the Dharma. And it was after knowing and seeing and hearing these that I went forth from the lay life to homelessness. That's the expression when a monk ordains, is to go from the lay life to homelessness. And then of course the king wants to know, well, what are these four summaries of the Dharma that would cause this person to ordain and to go forth? And maybe I'll just say that I've been kind of playfully in my mind, I've been thinking about these, just batting them around as these four summaries of the Dharma as four laws of Dharma dynamics. In some ways, right, these are you'll see, they're expressing empirical facts. And maybe it's not the same thing as the conservation of energy or talking about entropy, but it's fun to think about. The four Dharma dynamics, four laws of Dharma dynamics are these four summaries. So the first summary is the summary of the Dharma that Ratapala says to the king is, the world is unstable and swept away. And maybe naturally the king asks for clarification, what does this mean? And Ratapala responds by, well, what do you think, great king? When you were 20 or 25 years of age, were you proficient at riding elephants, horses, and chariots, and at archery? And were you strong and capable? And the king responds, I was, Master Ratapala. Sometimes it seems as if I had superpowers then. I don't see anyone who could have equaled me in strength. So you can imagine, here's a king who's aged, and when he's looking back, it maybe feels like superpowers, what we used to be able to do when we were 20 or 25. And then Ratapala asks the king, what do you think? These days, are you just as strong and capable? And the king responds, no. Now I am old, elderly, senior, and sometimes I intend to step in one place, but my foot goes somewhere else. In my mind, I'm kind of thinking like, whoop, you know, just, it's true, right? That we're less steady as we age. And maybe we might think of this as one summary of the Dharma. The Buddha has said the world is unstable and swept away. Maybe we could understand this as that aging happens. Of course, no one gets younger as time passes. The passage of time is associated with aging. And this is maybe the first law of Dharma dynamics. So the second summary that Ratapala gave to the king, saying is, the world has no shelter and no savior. And the king asks, what does this mean? And Ratapala responds by saying, in this royal court you can find, I'm sorry, the king says, what does this mean? There's can find no shelter and no savior. In my court, you can find divisions of elephants and cavalry and chariots and infantry, and they will defend us from any threats. And yet you say that there is no shelter and no savior. How should I understand the meaning of this statement? And Ratapala says, well, great king, do you have any chronic ailments? And the king says, yes, I do. And even sometimes my friends and colleagues and relatives and family members surround me thinking, well, the king will surely die now, right? So the king is sick, and sometimes he gets very sick. And Ratapala says to him, well, what do you think? Can you get your friends, colleagues, relatives, and family members to help? Can you ask them, all of you here, can you share my pain so that I may feel less pain? That is, can others take away your pain, your like your physical pain? So, or must you alone feel your pain? And the king responds, I can't get my friends and family to share my pain. Rather, I alone must feel it. And so this is what the Buddha was referring to when he said the world has no shelter and no savior, is that we can't transfer our physical pain to another. We can't give it to someone else, or they can't take it from us. Sure, of course, we have medicine and people are a support for us, but we can't just make it go away. We can diminish it or find ways to work with it. But having chronic ailments, perhaps, or some physical pain is part of the human experience. Maybe this is the second law of Dharma dynamics. The third summary that the Buddha gave was, the world has no owner. You must leave it all behind and pass on. And the king asked for clarification what this means, saying, in my court you can find abundant gold that is stored in dungeons and towers, and yet you say the world has no owner, you must leave it all behind and pass it on. How should I understand the meaning of this? And Ratapala says, well, what do you think, great king? These days you amuse yourself supplied and provided with the five kinds of sensual stimulation. That is like stimulation, you know, the five sense doors. Hearing, seeing, touching, smelling, tasting. But is there, then the Ratapala continues, is there any way to ensure that in the next life, that is whatever happens after death, that you will continue to amuse yourself in the same way? Or will others make use of this property while you pass on, while you die, according to your deeds? That is, whatever happens to you after your next life will be according to your deeds. So pointing to the teaching on rebirth. And the king responds, there's no way to ensure that I will continue to amuse myself in the same way after I die. Rather, others will take over this property, and I will pass on according to my deeds, going to, or whatever arises after death. So this is what the Buddha was referring to when he said, the world has no owner. You must leave it all behind. So this idea that we can't take it with us, and maybe even pointing to this idea that ownership is really only a convenient social convention. We don't really own things in the sense that we don't can't take that with us. Maybe this is the third law of Dharma dynamics. And then the fourth summary that the Buddha gave is, the world is wanting, insatiable, the slave of craving. And the king asks for clarification. What does this mean? And Ratapala asks him, well, do you dwell in this prosperous land of Kuru? And the king says, yes, indeed I do. And Ratapala says, well, what do you think, great king? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable person were to come from the east, and they would approach you and say, please, sir, you should know this, that I'm coming from the east, and there I saw a large country that is successful and prosperous and full of people, and they have many divisions of elephants, cavalries, chariots, and infantry, and plenty of money and lots of grain. And with your current forces, you can conquer it, and you should conquer it. Go conquer it, great king. And what would you do if somebody came to you and said that? And the king responds, and he says, I would conquer it and dwell there. Well, what do you think, great king? suppose a trustworthy and reliable person were to come from the west, a person were to come from the north, a person were to come from the south, come from all directions and saying, oh, just over there, there is this great country that has lots of people and money and grain and everything we need, and you can conquer it. Then what would you do? Well, so this is what that Buddha was referring to when he said the world is wanting, insatiable, this slave of craving. And the king doesn't... The king responds, it's incredible, Master Ratthaphala, it's amazing how well said this was by the Buddha, for the world is indeed wanting, insatiable, a slave of craving. So maybe that there's this always wanting, or we can, there's no freedom in always trying to find more, 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 trying to satisfy every single desire. Maybe that's the fourth law of Dharma dynamics. So in these four different summaries, there's also a pointing to Ratthaphala and his wisdom, the way that he's talking to the king, saying that aging arises. But the first law of, maybe I should stop calling him that, when he's saying that the world is unstable and swept away, saying that aging arises. When he's saying that the world has no shelter and no savior, saying that sickness arises. And saying that the world has no owner, you must leave it all behind and pass on, saying death arises. And saying that the world is wanting, insatiable, the slave of craving, saying that there is dukkha, old age, sickness, and death, and dukkha. Many of you will recognize this. Maybe the first three certainly is heavenly messengers, and the fourth one, often the fourth heavenly messenger, is a monastic, a mendicant, somebody who's striving to find an end to dukkha. So just as the four heavenly messengers were a support for the Buddha to go forth and find the Dharma, and the four heavenly messengers in some way were for Ratthaphala, and maybe all of us can find in some way that we're like that king too. And maybe hearing some of the Dharma, taking refuge in the Dharma, is a way in which we recognize that there is old age, sickness and death, and there's dukkha. And to take refuge in the Dharma is to not run away from this and pretend that it's otherwise, or to think that somehow if we just finally get all our ducks in a row, these things will go away. But instead, to take refuge in the Dharma can be to recognize, yes, this is the way things are. And how can I create the conditions? How can I live a life? How can I practice in such a way that honors my experience and helps me to find a way that's with less suffering, with less dukkha, with less stress, and to find a place of safety, to align ourselves with the nature, the natural way that things are, these, the laws of nature. So maybe it's a little bit silly to call these the laws of Dharma dynamics, but maybe in the same way that the laws of thermodynamics make it abundantly clear, of course there can be no perpetual motion machine. What do the laws of the Dharma make clear for you? And can you take refuge in that? We all can use some refuge these days, this feeling of safety, a place where we feel supported. So in whatever way makes sense for you, may you find refuge in the Dharma. Thank you.